stuff on you?
Power is only worth 15 to 20 million
dollars. I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We are national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware on the radio. However, friends, family, and all those that you know, no matter where they live in the USA or across the world, can tune in simply by going on the internet to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Also, today, we will be sending out a rebroadcast of our program, as we did last week, and I want to compliment all of our panel members, Rich, Larkin, and Mark, and Henry. Everybody joined in last week, and the program was absolutely great. I received a lot of very good comments from individuals who are pleased with the way things are happening in the USA. I also want to compliment Mike Sessions for that American Workers Radio link on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. I'm encouraging you to go on there, click on it, and register to be part of the app that will take you to all of the American-made products that you can find. And we're going to have to do a lot more to get all of that moving forward in the future, and especially September's coming up, Labor Day's coming up. It's going to be great. I want to say welcome to Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connolly, the national small business advocate, Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology, who will be joining us in a little bit. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash, and I have special greetings to you and yours from Curtis Ellis, the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance and America First Project. Well, guys and ladies and gentlemen, this week we witnessed a lot of events in America. We saw more of the national media than ever talking about jobs here in the United States. They also talked in our region of the country about how America's schools have not produced enough graduates to enter the job force needed right now here in the USA. We saw the passing of Senator John McCain, an outstanding American who will certainly be remembered in American history as a great American, and our condolences to his family and all who knew him. We also saw President Trump working to change the NAFTA agreement, something we've discussed for years, the agreement with Mexico, to a new plan that looks to be more beneficial to America and American workers. And now we see the efforts to include Canada, and it's going to enhance the trade deal with America, something that none of us really knew exactly was helping who. We didn't know what percentage was helping Americans, what percentage was helping foreign companies. We will know more about that in the next 6 months to a year. And we're also marking the 134th anniversary of the first Labor Day celebration in America. And today I'd like to focus some time on Labor Day and how it really honors American workers. But before we get into all of our other issues, I want to ask Mark Andel for some opening remarks. Mark, Labor Day's coming. How's everything going with you?
Good, Mike and crew and listeners. You know, thanks for having me on again, Mike. No, we're fired up. We've got a lot. We're finally getting rested after the huge fair in August. But, you know, Labor Day, you bring it up. I've got great workers, not good workers. And, you know, hopefully they all get a little chance to get out this weekend and, you know, be proud of America and theirself, because boots, not suits, built this country, Mike. And it's a great, great weekend. We got school starting next week. Made in America is alive and well. And our store and store side, Mike's doing real well. And we got some great opportunities. Texas and around the country coming up. So very exciting times. I just thank the listeners and you for believing. It's loyal people, believing people and caring people that really you need in government and all around you.
You know, Mark, you're right. And it's people like us, the little voices that become bigger voices. And the people in the national media really don't like us because we are saying things that are coming true, like changes in America.
We're too American, huh, Mark?
We're too American. They want to focus on all the negativity, the craziness going on, and wasting our time, our lives, and our money, and the human capital that all of our young people are, you know, needing these jobs. There are people who are graduating, and we're having a few job fairs in September and October. Many of those people don't have anything on that resume that present-day employers are looking for.
Mike, I want to bring up one thing before you go to the other gentleman. You know, my daughter's 15, riding in a truck, going to field hockey practice. She's non-political as, you know, you could be. And she said, Dad, I've never heard of somebody get picked on so much as our president. And I just thought, coming from a 15-year-old, hey, what an example it is to have somebody so abused that's actually doing some really good things. And I just want to bring that up.
Quite frankly, I think it's a little bit of an anger fest because we've been watching 30 years of decline. And all of a sudden, things that everything was never going to be touched are being touched. Things that were never going to be said are being said.
But if children wonder why the president of the United States get picked on so much, that's just something. That's a statement, Mike.
Absolutely makes no sense. What do you say today, Larkin?
Good morning, Michael and Mark. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Boots, not suits. That's a new one. I like.
Did you like that one, Larkin?
I have to use that. Boots, not suits. You know, I share your concern over the kerfuffle that exists now between the press and the president. It's got to get fixed somehow. I think, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, and I'm as card-carrying a Republican as you know, and I believe in the Republic ethic. Their desire for small government and lower taxes, and I believe in all of that. But I think both sides in this instance are really to blame here. So if we could just get them to bury the hatchet, in my view, in some progressive's head. No, I didn't mean that. If they could just bury the hatchet and come out and start addressing fixes for America, they really do. The other thing I would ask is that I don't know if there's anybody in our listening audience or on our wonderful staff that takes the time to watch nighttime television, the shows that come on after the 11 o'clock news, Colbert and The Tonight Show and Jimmy Kimmel. These guys are also appreciating some great economic uplift because it's very obvious that they've fired all of their comedy writers. They have no staff. They don't need it. All they do is talk about Trump. And and when Trump takes that away, they're going to have to hire back writers to be funny again. Although, I really have to tell you, if you think Colbert's funny, I didn't say anything about being poignant or about being correct or about being political. But if you think it's funny, I don't know. My father always told me in the early days when I really thought that I wanted to be in the entertainment business, my father always said to me, if you tell a joke and people applaud, throw the joke out. If you tell people a joke and they laugh, well, then it's funny and they enjoyed what they heard. And there's just too much applauding going on.
Right. Good point.
Because I don't know how else to react. It's not funny. So I thought all these opening salvos from our nighttime entertainers were supposed to be funny monologues of sort, and they just aren't. So fundamentally, I think the country's on the right path. I'd like to sneak up into the White House unseen and steal Trump's phone so he can stop tweeting. And he's a very impulsive man. Everybody needs to know that and understand it. There have been impulsive people in power before, but he's impulsive. He says what comes on his mind. And sometimes it comes out right, and sometimes it comes out wrong. There are a handful of things that he said that I wish he could, that I know he wishes he could take back.
Yes.
And one of them certainly was the off-the-cuff remark about McCain.
Yes.
We lost an American hero. We really did. I mean, the guy, after 2 years in captivity, was given the offer because his father's an admiral to come home, and he said, "I'll be the last one off the plane." And I don't know. I agreed with John McCain to great degree. I agreed with his feelings about special interest groups and how they have to be eliminated. They have to go away. It's what, the Republicans, as McCain used to say, came to power to change Washington, and Washington has changed them. And it's very true that Republicans are guilty as the Democrats of being more concerned about their own net worth than the outcome of this country. I think you have to search a long way to find a patriot like John McCain. We've lost a big one there. He also hated campaign finance. He hated it and tried so hard to pass. So I liked John McCain for that. I consider myself a moderate Republican, just like him. He wasn't for term limits, so I didn't agree with him there at all. But I don't know. I just make a clear-cut statement. He was a great American. He loved the country. Country first. You could see it in so many different ways. It's extraordinary. Those are going to be big boots to fill.
Well said, Larkin, and a great tribute to John McCain, who was a great hero. And it is unfortunate that there's been all this wrangling going on, but this is the way life is. It's just like anything else that we're experiencing in America. I wanted to just make note of a few things. I've had a number of our listeners and supporters calling on the media and emailing the media about covering more issues, about getting the trades back in schools, and also to promote jobs in America, and how are we going to do that, if we can do it through what you suggested, Larkin, the intern tax break or something. And the standard answer to everyone is, thank you for your message. It will be referred to the proper parties, and we hope to hear from you again in the near future. Now, that is the lines from the media people. That is the lines from the elected people. And that's how it's been for years and years and years. They thank you for making the contact, but they let you know that they are not going to take any kind of action. And that's unfortunate, but it's a fact. You know, guys, during the last 134 years, America has experienced many historic events that really should be noted and, of course, discussed. Number one, America was the industrial giant of the world during the Industrial Revolution. Some people ask, why didn't we continue to keep up with all the automation and everything that's going on in other countries? We were the giant of the world. Others came into the crowd. And now our employers are searching, stealing employees from other companies just so that they would be able to keep their product lines on the move. We also saw America go through a major depression. Now, many of us were not even born at that time, but America went through a major depression and it came up. Things got back to normal. There were several recessions, some of which you and I experienced. We had world wars. We had growing automation in just about every industry. Yet America didn't take the challenge 30, 35 years ago. And now all that automation is taking place in foreign countries, and we're in the back of the bus.
Yep. Mike, I want to bring up, guys, I was watching TV last night, and a place in Buffalo that made, was clearing Niagara. You may have heard of it, or some of our listeners might have. They made the best press breaks in the world. A huge company. I actually got their last press break probably 10 years ago when they closed down in Buffalo. They turned that into, and it's just about to open September 10th, called Northland Workforce Center. Northland Workforce Center. It's almost ready. They've got machining, manufacturing, welding. They put $200 million into this, Mike. Very, very exciting. They got 120,000 or 120 or 200 applicants already, just trying to screen them and get them going. Very exciting. And I want to say a bus came from St. Louis yesterday. I welcomed them like I do, tell the story. They come off. The bus driver whispered to me, what do you think about Trump or whatever? I said, we're non-political. I don't really go. All I'm going to tell you is we're very busy. And we need workers. And he said, very busy, huh? That's great to hear. That's all I hear, how busy everybody is. But these places like Northland Workforce, the skilled trade shortage is just incredibly, should be talked every night on the news. We've talked about it for 5 years here, Mike, or more. But places like Northland Workforce Center are happening because of this demand. And these people are going to make $50,000 to $100,000 when they come out. It's a no-brainer. They're never going to starve. And we have so much work. I've never seen this in 10 years.
And, you know, Mark, this is why Sherman McLeod and some of the others in the Philadelphia area are starting all of these training programs.
Yes, we're
or expanding this. Programs that were underfunded or lost their funding 20, 25 years ago. And now they are coming back to life. The big thing is a lack of students graduating from America's schools right now. Many of the people that are going to go to the training programs are people already in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. How about these young people coming out of the schools ready to go and have some hands-on experience?
Yes, and you know, Larkin's, he's seen what I've seen too. When you help somebody and it works out, now a lot of them fail, a lot of them don't help themselves. There's not a lot of want. It's a different world. We all know that. But I told my shop manager, Dale, that give me 5 years. I told him that 3 years ago. We'll change the culture here because we got negative. We didn't have good middle management. We're doing things, and I've got these guys coming up, these young kids. You find them out of 10, you might get one or two. We might drop one or two a week, hire three. It's happening, though. And when you see people kind of getting excited about making good money, learning a trade, it's kind of cool to build things and be proud of it. And, Larkin, you've seen this with entrepreneurs. It's great to see, and I'm seeing it. It's coming around. You can't watch the news. I limit it myself. I say with the positive. But to watch people help themselves and learn a trade is just incredible, or open a business, Larkin. You can add to this.
Yeah, you're 100% right, Mark. You know, I want to say something to support what Mark said in a little bit different vein. Because we've all seen that the entrepreneur spirit in this country is unlike it anywhere else in the world. No, nowhere else in the world can you, and I know I'm going to hear from the Brits and I'm going to hear from the Germans and the Italians because they all have...
About living an American dream, Larkin?
They all have free markets, but...
but they move here.
I'm sorry?
But they move here.
Yeah, they move here, yeah. They can't wait to open their market here because we're the number one consumer economy in the world. But I'm surprised that we're 19, 20 minutes into the program, and I haven't brought this up. It just got by me. I just found the note. But in a recent interview, the CEO of Target said that today's economy is the best consumer environment that he's seen in the in his entire career.
Really, and I'll give it 10 years, Larkin. I'm telling you, we got more work. It's exciting.
And the same thing from Target. Although Walmart. Walmart said, you know, and these aren't obviously the Made in America guys that we want to bring forth just yet, but Walmart said it's the best consumer environment in the history of the economy. Now, that's a pretty, yeah, pretty powerful comment.
But you didn't see that on World News, but you read that.
That's right. And that's a powerful statement, Larkin. Wow. That's a very powerful statement. Our objective is to get as many of the new products that are being put on the lines in America into the Walmarts, into the Targets, and into the local stores as well. That's the whole thing.
Mike, we're going to do that.
It's already happening. It's happening. The thing is, I wanted to ask you, Mark, before I forget. You mentioned that sometimes you lose a person or two. Is there any given reason that they're going?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, that's a great question, because sometimes it's soft skills. You know, they just can't get it here on time, absenteeism. And we're guilty of being, we got the nice gene, we're too nice, but we try to give them a 90-day probation, and we're trying to live by that. Sometimes it's just ability, Mike. Lately, we let a good person go. He just didn't have the ability. We gave him time. We can't have mistakes made on our top customers. We're dealing with Halliburton, BP, ExxonMobil. Ships have to leave every day. So it's frustrating. But if that gentleman would have had pre-experience or from high school even, if he was exposed to it, how to use the basic tools and whatnot, we could start him at a different level. So our problem is speed and time, and we can't afford mistakes. Our goal is to deliver quality parts, product, and service on time. And I say grow our sales with extreme discipline and care. That is my mission statement.
And, Mark, you're saying exactly what the people are saying at the job fairs. They're saying, I need somebody dependable. I need somebody that has had some hands-on experience with the type of services and the products that we're trying to gain employees for.
And, Mike, when Larkin talks about an entrepreneur, and Larkin's seen this, I've known, they're diehards. They don't quit. They'll stand 12 hours. They get the job done. When I joke, you know, an entrepreneur works 100 hours a week so he don't have to have a 40-hour job, it becomes their baby. So that spirit and that drive in this country is what built this country. People don't really realize what an entrepreneur goes through. They think you put a sign up, you're a millionaire. Well, it's a little more difficult than that. So that drive, that's what we want. I always want borderline entrepreneurs when I hire. I want the guy that doesn't quite want to go on his own, but he's that caliber or, you know, level 5 leader, self-managed person.
That's right. And Mark Larkin and Rich is with us too. You know, over the years, let's just hold it at 30 years, we saw thousands of businesses moving their manufacturing to foreign countries, and it really hurt more than most people then acknowledge. We saw poverty in America grow as other countries grew jobs and job skills. And still, national leaders and all elected officials are having a denial problem that they helped to cause this situation. They're looking at a man who's in the White House now, riling up the Mexicans, riling up the Canadians, and saying, well, we didn't think they would come to the table. What do you mean they wouldn't come to the table? Well, I don't understand. You know, now, there was a man, I was on a radio program a few weeks ago, and a man said to me, the guy said to me, Michael, during the Obama years, we didn't want to call on down the president because he was the first biracial president, and we didn't want to make anybody think that we were doing wrong. During the Bush years, we wanted, because of the 9/11 situation and all Bush was doing to, handle the freedom, keep freedom in America, number one, and we didn't want to push that either. I said, so what you're saying is you're acknowledging that 16 years passed by where you could have spoken up and you didn't. That doesn't make sense to me. And he says, well, this is a reality. And now we have a man in the White House who doesn't need the press. He tweets whatever he wants to. If you say this, he says that. And this is what keeps this publicity. Is it bad, Larkin? In some respects, yes. In other respects, if it wasn't done this way, we wouldn't have the progress that we have today.
Mike, is Rich on the radio?
Yes, Rich. How are you doing, guy?
Hey, guys. Good morning. I've been listening, guys, since the start. I had to finish a compliance webinar, and then everyone has to give a comment to confirm their compliance. When it was my turn, I came on and said, someone had to wake me up. I was like, man, that was, you want to talk about dull. This is much more exciting, Michael. And I was listening from the get-go, and I got to get a couple comments here. So I want to have a comment, if I may, Larkin. I hope happily marry your remarks about the press and John McCain, and I offer condolences and sympathies to Senator McCain's family. You know, I went back and decided, Larkin, to take a look at what the Democrat media industrial complex coverage of John McCain was back in 2008 after he was the nominee. And what I'm about to tell you is why so many American people, even before President Trump, he just was the icing on the cake, why so many people before President Trump came along and ran, why there's such a deep distrust that I don't really think can ever be restored, just as I don't think that full trust can now be restored with the big tech industrial complex. So interestingly, there were lots of stories about Senator McCain when he ran that were birther stories. Remember the thing with Obama, Michael, with he was born in another country?
And, oh, yes.
Right, yeah. You know that
the birther issue.
The D-Mike did that with John McCain. You guys know that, right? The New York Times ran stories openly questioning whether John McCain could constitutionally become president. They also ran numerous stories about calling him too old, a warmonger, racist. What, you think being called a racist is new? Of course not. Stories about alleged affairs that John McCain had with a staffer who was a lobbyist. And now, 8 years later, 10 years later, John McCain is the last of the great American heroes. So what happened between being an old racist, warmongering, unconstitutionally fit to be president to now being the last of the American hero? What happened in between those 10 years is what I want to know.
Well, this is a very good question, Rich. Very good question.
What happened? What did he... So he lost an election, right? So Senator McCain, rest in peace, he lost an election. He and the president clearly did not have a good relationship. So what happened in between those 10 years to go from an old, white, unfit, warmongering Republican to being the exact opposite? That's what I want to know. That's what I would ask the Democrat media industrial complex. What happened in between that? And I suspect that the primary answer is that John McCain was very, very happy and willing to criticize harshly the president. And so that made him, he went from persona non grata to being sort of a darling. And I'm not really criticizing Senator McCain in saying this. I'm just, as a former journalist, you know, I always took stories, Michael, where the facts led me. I didn't attempt to create a story based on what I wanted the outcome to be. So I'm looking at the facts of what Senator McCain and happened with the D-mic, and I'm sitting here wondering what occurred in the last 10 years to make the press do a 180 on John McCain.
Well, let me see if I can adjust that a little bit. First of all, in the day-to-day game of politics, and this is best explained by John McCain himself, you have to have thick skin. That's part of the president's problem. You can't have an ego his size and a thin skin at the same time. It's not a very good blend at all. I've never known anybody with as big an ego. I've known a couple people who were close to that ego, but they were also thick-skinned. I can't imagine having an ego that size and being thin-skinned. John McCain was quite the opposite. He was very, very thick-skinned. He never, when the unfortunate remark was made that the president preferred people who didn't get captured, somebody asked McCain what he thought of that, and he said, "Boy, that's not the worst thing that's ever been said about me. I heard about the remark. I've never heard it, and I don't know that I'm going to go out of my way to to hear it, but whatever. It's all's fair in love and war, I guess. I mean, that is essentially what he did. When you write in the press about a current political campaign, you know, there's no bars held. There really aren't. This isn't a polite business. Never has been. And I don't think you can even, you know, John McCain, I worked it. I worked it so seriously in Philadelphia that I had a hard time keeping up with score. I worked very, very hard for John McCain, and we didn't even have headquarters. We didn't even have an office in Philadelphia. It's the seventh largest market in the country, granted, a Democratic market. But there's always the strategy in Philadelphia that if you can keep the slaughter down for Republicans in Philadelphia, it really helps hugely in the rest of the state. So, you know, we never had any visions of beating anybody in Philadelphia. We just try to keep the, you know, the bloodletting smaller. I don't know if I'm hitting on the cylinders that need to be hit here, but... Yeah. You know, a lot of bad things said about John McCain. He'd be the first one to tell you. He wrote in his book that he was a womanizer and that his first marriage was completely his fault. And then he had nothing but empathy, sorrow, and remorse for the way he treated his
guys. Guys, I just want to add a point. So the heroes, our veterans, is what the Made in America story is all about. And there's no higher honor to us. And God bless them. I mean, great, great hero. But when you entered an arena into politics, I think that's what you're touching on. It's a tough area.
It's a brutal area.
Yeah.
But let me counter, please, because see, I was very young and naive when I became a reporter. It was the year 2000. I was 23 years old. And I went into my job every day actually very obsessed with never wanting to be perceived as a hack siding with one group or another. It was an actual sort of work obsession for me because I would commonly have sources come to me and say, Rich, I'll give you a tip if you write the story this way. And I refuse that stuff, Mark. I never, ever willfully and consciously interjected my politics into any story that I wrote. It doesn't mean I didn't make mistakes. I'm sure if I went back and looked over 4.5 years of articles, I'd find some areas and say, you know,
Rich,
I should have said that better. So
you didn't give
what I'm saying, Larkin, is that to get into the game of politics, see, to call someone, you know, too old, unfit, warmongering, that's what the political opponent says. I thought the press is supposed to be objective because when I say the stories I'm saying to you, they appeared in publications like the New York Times and the Washington Post and CNN, you know, the usual suspects. That sounds to me just like they're doing public relations at the time for President Obama.
And
doesn't here, really sound here, like the press, objective press to me.
And here, in fact, lies where Bruce and I go round and around and around. I'm a purist when it comes to the press. As far as I'm concerned, on every page of that paper, it's who, what, when, where, and why.
There you go, Larkin.
You report the facts.
Fifth grade,
and
we learned.
If you've
that.
Got an opinion, and you want to drop your trousers and show us your opinion, then you write it on the op-ed page. That's where it belongs. And I'm telling you, the New York Times opening paragraphs above the fold on the front page are some of the most outrageous, unbelievable paragraphs I have ever read in the free press. Ever read in the free press. It's not the way it's supposed to be. And that's why the New York Times is a birdcage liner in my eyes. Great writers. But gosh, they just, you know.
Well, I agree with you, Larkin. And I'll tell you one thing. A lot of things are going to change in the press, too. because as the people are getting tired of listening to the same rigmarole, digested and digested and thrown out again and again and again, and they're starting not to even look at the stuff online, they're starting to think for themselves. You yourself mentioned...
Michael, do you mind if I... I'm sorry, guys. I don't mean to monopolize. Just, you know, talking about the youth and media get me, you know... That's where the espressos I had really... I really leveraged them, Mark. So the thing is that... See, the common... Here's the thing, Larkin. The common rebuttal, typically, to what I just said, in basically with 9 out of 10 Democrats... is what about Fox News? This is why the internet is arguably the most amazing invention. I mean, it's as amazing an invention as any when it comes to disseminating information. There's not anything that, with all due respect to, you know, the inventors of the to Bell with the telephone, nothing is like the internet. It has to remain untouched. The government needs to be totally away from it. It's why I say that the toothpaste is now out of the tube with the big tech industrial complex, because 9 out of 10 Democrats assume that someone who would say what I say thinks that a place like Fox News is the end-all be-all when it comes to news and analysis and information. And I know it comes as a shock for many Democrats to believe this, but we actually don't think that. And the thing about Fox, and this isn't really me, I'm not even saying this really to criticize, it's just a fact. Fox News is essentially the only major network news and opinion network, right? Fox is. So it's like, if you have the only pizzeria in Philadelphia, it's the busiest pizzeria, right? Because it's only that one there. So that's essentially what's happened with Fox. But if you look at actually Fox's ratings, they've been declining over the last several years. And that's because people are going in additional places. It's still, as much as people can want to say to me, what about Fox News? And as much as many Fox hosts weren't fans, clearly, of President Obama, I do ascribe, Larkin. I still do ascribe, even though I have an opinion show that is driven by facts, I still ultimately, in my naive self, when it comes to journalism, is still with you. Who, what, when, where, and why? I've never strayed from that. But the thing, Larkin, is that, you know, how you view it and sort of how I view it, unfortunately, is just not how the majority of Americans on all sides of all political spectrums view it. It doesn't change the fact, again, to my original point, that in a 10-year span, you know, John McCain went from the things that I said that the press talked about him as to becoming this amazing American hero. And political opponents can throw barbs at each other. That's what politics is. But, you know, the press now very, very willfully does that. And I think the 2016 election has probably once and for all destroyed the credibility of the press by the fact that we know that major media companies, from the Washington Post to the New York Times to Politico, directly colluded with the Clinton campaign. We know this now. Direct collusion. So if you want to talk about collusion, let's talk about it on all fronts. But of course, the same ones colluding are the same ones who don't talk about it. Why? Because that's how you have to keep the lie up. You have to withhold the information. Is there any information that there was a direct collusion between Fox News and President Trump? I'm not talking about favoritism. I'm talking about direct collusion. It's now been shown that the Democrat media industrial complex, some of their companies, did it with the Clinton campaign. Listen, that's tough to restore that trust, because that's like having, you know, that's it. Just I don't know how it can happen.
You know, here's the deal. It's a very, very tough business, the press. Especially the written word. I mean, they're dropping like flies. They're consolidating. Very few cities in America have two papers. You know, in Pittsburgh, we had the Press and the Post-Gazette. One was Republican, the other was a Democrat. And they're fighting now for survival. And I'm going to tell you what sells on the front page. It isn't what, who, what, when, where, and why. because even the USA Today tries who, what, when, where, and why. It doesn't tell. And they're in survival mode right now. They are in survival mode. And I mentioned a little earlier that Bruce Bassett-Powell, a great friend of ours, has always said that there's always been an opinion above the fold on the front page. I don't agree with that. And Bruce Bassett-Powell, I don't think you have an argument.
Well, Bruce is with us. Hey, Bruce, you want to defend yourself?
Absolutely. I should tell you that I am the son of a man who ran a major London newspaper called the Daily Telegraph for close to 20 years. And it's still a great newspaper. And I know that he would totally disagree with what Larkin says. I don't think you get a journalist on the planet to go through the school of journalism and then only be allowed to say what comes over the transom and not to have the slightest bit of opinion. If a journalist is standing in the middle of 100 dead bodies from somebody who's just dropped sarin gas, he's only going to say, I've got 100 dead bodies here, thank you, back to you. He's not. He's going to have an opinion, and he should have an opinion. And I'm sorry, that's the way I feel, and I disagree with Larkin very completely. Love him to death, but we disagree on that. I'd just like to I'm not going to get into the politics you're talking about because I'm not a voter here in this country. I'm still a British citizen. But what I will say to you about, you know, America, I agree that America is certainly the best entrepreneurial place to be on the planet. But just an anecdotal thing for me, I had 8 good friends at school. We were sort of like a clique. And we all obviously went in different directions after we left school. But one thing I will tell you, that every one of those 8 people that I went to school with started their own businesses, all of which were successful. I was the only one that came to America and started a business, but I feel very, very sure that if I'd started it in England, it would have been just as successful. I think that, entrepreneurialism is not only something that the United States has a hold on. I think it happens in a lot of places. Unfortunately, 2 of my friends that were with me have passed away, but at least 5 of them still have businesses going. I've got a friend of mine I speak to regularly. He runs his business for Mallorca, Sunset Mallorca, and it's very successful. So that's just for a... you think of that America is certainly a great and wonderful entrepreneurial place to be, but other places are as well.
Well, Bruce, we are seeing some very good changes in America. I'm pleased to say that. And no matter, as I said last week, if it's Trump, Schmump, or Bump, we need somebody in the White House. We need people in the House and Senate to really shake up this country so that we never have another depression, another recession. We don't have growing automation in all over the world and not in America. It's nice to have all the cell phones and all, but if we don't have the students ready to enter the workforce, then the businesses decide to move overseas. And by the way, for 25 years, that was the biggest excuse they came up with. We don't have enough workers in America to fill the jobs that we need. They want to come in for 1 hour a day and one hour for lunch. There's no work ethic that was, pushed upon them. Going to school, I would say in the 8th and 9th grade, is a must. Even some of the people that come to the job fairs. No experience writing a resume in their school. You should see some of the resumes that people come forward with. It's almost unbelievable.
I brought that up about no writing, no cursive, but let alone no writing being taught in certain schools. I think Larkin, you brought it up. And Bruce, welcome. Great to hear from a non-citizen, your angle, too, and I believe in entrepreneurism around the world, but I do say support the country you live in. And when I talk about you got to be loyal, you got to be loyal to your country, you got to believe in your country, and you got to care for your country and the people. And
absolutely.
You've got to bring in more money than you spend out. It's simple lemonade stand stuff. And we took the eye off the ball. America got selfish, greedy, and lazy, and we're paying for it dearly. But it's nice to see when things are going in the right direction. But the press could have more positive talk or maybe talk about skill trades. This show today is probably one of our better shows talking about the press because I hear about it all the time. You had a different angle, Bruce. You were a journalist. So this is something that needs to be talked about.
By leaders throughout history. I mean, they were bad enough even during the beginning of the American Revolution. You know, what your revolution may not have taken place if it hadn't been for an opinionated press.
Well, that's very true. Wow, is that very true. Very true. I'm going to ask you guys all to answer this question. We are now going, you know, in a great direction. We're moving full steam ahead. Rich, what would stop the great progress that we're having right now here in America?
It's all about the people, Mike. I mean, politics in the country is always about the people, right? It's always about, we had a primary last night, many states. I looked at some of the turnout numbers, Lark, and I it's a good thing I had eaten several hours before I saw them. It's a good thing I had. So,
but Rich, what will stop? What could stop us now that we're already on the road to a better future? What would hurt us, in your opinion? What would cause the next recession? What would cause the next unemployment wave?
I mean, I think, Michael, you know, the simplest answers tend to be the most correct. And we've agreed on this show that, you know, we've agreed on this show that a lot of people were asleep at the wheel for a long time. There was some awakening that occurred in 2016. There's momentum right now in the economy. If we take our foot off the gas, if we get back to getting sleepy again behind the wheel, it's as much as and difficult as it is to get momentum, it's much harder to keep it, and you can lose it as quickly as you got it. You know, and it's all about that small business growth.
That's exactly right. And
it is small business that will win the day. The one thing that America needs to worry about, which I think will cause, is the level of its debt right now.
That's right. And you know, when I look on the debt clock, everybody, there's still an enormous amount of people not in the labor force. Some of them are retired, some of them are children, but a lot of them are working age and able-bodied people, but they have no job to go to. Right now in America, there are 6 million jobs open, and we don't have enough people to fill them.
And Mike, I think if I could answer, you know, your question too, I think we're missing a point too. Confidence. When you see Donald Trump, he's got confidence. Larkin, you call, you know, ego or whatnot, but the man's got confidence. What the workers and the business owners have right now is confidence, which builds trust again in a system. And that is what we lost. We had lost the trust. Now they're starting to trust Washington, drain the swamp, get the users and the moochers out of there, get people that care about this country and other people. And I'll give you an example with press. My mother's 81, dad 82. All they come in and tell how weather, the rain's coming, it's blue sky. They get me nervous. My mother's saying how hot it is today because she heard it 200 times by watching the weather. So if you heard good things, you'll pass good things on too. So, and that's one thing I'd like the press to do more. Well, Michael, we got to keep this confidence going forward.
Listen, the other thing that you have to keep in mind is our the market. We're in a bull market. We're in a market that we haven't seen since the first part of the
good
70s.
Point, Larkin. Yeah. I mean, it's market.
No, I mean, we really are. And unfortunately, those have to adjust. They always do. And how long this one will last, I don't know. But if we keep on pulling in the right direction, and when that market comes, we adjust properly, that's what makes our economy churn. Okay, so sell some of your loser stocks and buy metals. I mean, that's what we do. We save money, but we also spend money.
Didn't we adjust during the Reagan recession, which made the boom continue on?
He was getting beat up by the press, but not as bad as Trump is now.
So, well, see, Reagan was with the written press mainly and the TV. This is now the instant access press thing. Big problem, Twitter and all. But this shows me one thing, a big, big thing, and that is that we need not only now but in all time for future generations a real leader in the White House, somebody that will keep this their foot on the gas, that we move forward and never have to break because someone else is breaking us down.
And Mike, through the years, we all asked for a leader, but now we're seeing that. We're getting not just lip service, we're getting tangible evidence of change. And when you do that with people, they start seeing things that they can actually see and grab a hold of, and that is what gives that confidence. And, wow, we might have something here, and that's what we have rolling.
Yes.
You know, if we weren't enjoying what we were enjoying right now, I really do think Trump would have been gone. I really do. I think they would have battered him to death. But the fact of the matter is that the CEO of Target and the CEO of Walmart called this the most incredible consumer economy in the history. Did you hear that anywhere on the news?
No, I did not. And
that is a problem.
I agree with it.
That's exactly. And Larkin, we can keep this going because people always buy goods for themselves. They replace goods. It's a matter of having more of those goods, America, till we get to the point where Walmart and all the other stores are featuring no less than 50% of the products with a Made in America label. That continues the great boom that we're in. Yeah. Too many people focused on the negativity. Trump doesn't care. The next person who occupies the White House shouldn't care. He should be a leader at any cost.
And again, guys, we're looking for consumer confidence. We got more disposable income. And if people are coming out of their houses and going, wow, it is okay out here, that's what you want positive going for. And they're starting to think, hey, I can buy this and that. I get a little comfort security rolling here instead of hearing bad, bad, bad. The world's ending every day.
Right. That's exactly right. That was of no value. Henry, you wanted to say something.
I was just going to suggest something Larkin and Bruce were arguing about. If we had an automated press that was just driven by a computer that was just giving you facts and there was no person to, because I happen to think that Bruce is right. It's hard to take your emotion out of the situation, but I also think that Larkin's right in that it shouldn't be allowed in the situation. The only way to do that is to take the humanity out of the situation. Kind of like, you know, if you are a baseball guy and the balls and strikes thing just being called by a machine instead of a guy behind the plate, which I don't agree with, but I'm just saying in that direction.
Yeah.
Well,
all righty.
that's a great remark, Henry, but I defy, and I know Bruce reads the Times regularly, I defy you to read the opening paragraph of most stories above the fold. Let me clear it up. The opening paragraph of stories about Trump's administration. And, you know, it's, if I do a report card on Trump right now, I'm going to say, well, this guy's a little rough around the edges, huge ego, says the wrong thing sometimes, most of the time. It just doesn't come out right. But guess what? He's winning.
Getting
the economy is winning. Unemployment is the lowest it's been since the 60s. We have more African-Americans and Mexicans African Americans, Mexicans.
Everybody's employed.
Everybody's working.
Everybody is employed. And the goal is to manufacture, as Mark said, more than we consume right here in the United States and get our American-made products more on sale around the world. This is a big thing. All those factories, when you ride down the highways and see all of those empty buildings, those signs with for sale and available, those were occupied 20 years ago, 15 years ago. What happened? Greed.
It gets dangerous when we start living in the past like that. But,
we have to fill those places. They're there waiting for somebody to take them over.
Why is it that the press finds it necessary to refuse to acknowledge any of Trump's successes? because their mission is to bring them down.
Right. If they and by the way, Larkin, if they started to acknowledge the successes of the day, then nobody, everybody would say, oh, the things are going wonderful, and they would lose more of their viewers and more of their people buying the paper. So bad news in one respect sells, but you should have a balance in the news, too. This is what happening,
right. Yep.
And this is what we should see happening, and this is what we need to support. We need to talk. Why aren't the major people in the press talking about the need for skilled workers in America?
Mike, did you guys read the Curtis letter notice, that notice on China? Now, China's not only selling to us, like he basically asked, why do we even deal with them? But they're sliding things through Vietnam, through Japan, through other countries,
right,
to avoid our trade rules already. All the findings in that letter and notice he sent out are amazing.
They're all facts and figures. And this is what happened. When the leaders of the country took their eye off the real issues, this is what you have happening all over the world. If people who are bringing this stuff to America should be able to say this is coming on a container from another country, not from China or not from there. They subcontracted to other countries, sending it to America under their label.
If we don't keep an eye on China, we are going to severely be at risk. China is right now one of the most powerful military nations on the planet. It is closing in on the United States at an amazing rate. As of now, they have 800 submarines. As of just 5 years ago, they had like 70, or maybe 10 years ago.
Wow.
They've got a new aircraft carrier coming and two more on the way. They are determined to make the Pacific theater their own, and they're building bases on the African coast and in Sri Lanka.
And Bruce, you're right, and this is exactly why we tried to stop and are stopping that, them purchasing the rights to that beach place in California where they would be able to run that port on their own. Well, as you hear by the music, it is time for us to say farewell for today. I just want to say thank you. Labor Day's coming up on Monday. Kindly go out of your way to support our message. Invite people to tune into our program. Check out Rich Logis by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on his photo. You'll go right to the Rich Logis show, and you can check out Mark Andel and his show as well. It's right under his label on the right side. Click on and listen to Mark Andel's show. Happy Labor Day to all of you, and a very happy holiday.
Marcus Aurelius, the great philosopher, said, waste no more time arguing about what a good man should be. Go out and be one.
Excellent. Have a great week. Have a great Labor Day. Bruce and Larkin, I picture in sumo wrestling suits at some point here.
Happy Labor Day, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Okay.